No, we're still early in our review of Paul's first epistle, his letter to the Galatians. So we have not yet been given, provided, all of the evidence that is necessary, although we will be in time, to prove that Paul failed every aspect of Yahweh's Torah test to determine a false prophet. And this is important because God provided us a means to which to determine for certain whether or not someone spoke for God or not. And I want to tell you, including it in a religious book isn't one of those tests. It being voted on by religious people isn't one of those tests. It being in something called the New Testament isn't one of those tests. The tests that Christians rely upon are not part of Yahweh's review mechanism. In fact, they hold absolutely no weight with God. So the various things that Christians say, well, it's in the Bible. You can't choose what to accept and reject in the Bible. That's completely counter to what God says. God says, I've got a means for you to know for certain whether or not someone is speaking for me or not. And here's the criterion that you should use to make that determination. And so God is telling us we should make that judgment as to whether or not something is from him or not from him. The antithesis of what the Christian would tell you. And when you apply that test, you'll find that Paul failed every aspect of God's test. And so now that Paul has presented us with a choice, he says that, you know, if anyone reveals a message which is different in any way than the message that he is preaching, then that person should be condemned. So there were conflicting messages. And Paul calls it an issue of life and death. And Paul's now saying that the disciples of Yahusha, who he met with in Jerusalem, that their opinions were of no concern to him. He disregarded them and their, in his words, dokiai, subjective opinions. So now we have a reason to apply this test to both Shimon Kefesh and Yahuchanan and Matanyah, Peter, Matthew, John, as well as to Paul, because they are in conflict now. Paul has told us emphatically that their message and his are not the same. Now that means that either one of that group, since Matanyah, Yahuchanan, and Shimon Kefesh, John, Peter, and Matthew's message was consistent, it means that either the disciples were wrong, that Paul was wrong, or that both were wrong. There is no possibility, since their message were conflicting, since Paul says that they have conflicting messages, that his message and theirs were different, and that they should be eternally condemned because their message is different, that with that being part of Paul's letters, you cannot rationally make the claim that both are right. So either Matthew, Mark, which is inspired by Shimon Kefesh, and John, need to be removed from the Christian New Testament, or Paul's letters, or both. Those are your only choices. You can't have both of them remain. You can remove both from consideration. You can remove one or the other from consideration. And the means you should rationally go about to make that determination are found in the Torah, where Yahweh provides a systematic way, an objective test, to recognize whether or not someone is speaking for him. So, after I share this test, you will be properly equipped to quarrel with Paul if he violates Clause 2, Clause 4, or Clause 5 and 6 regarding Yahweh's test. So, we'll be looking for historic chronologies, such as Paul's testimony regarding the Jerusalem summit, as well as other prophetic predictions, because without them, Yahweh's signature endorsement will be missing. To be considered a spokesperson for Yahweh, you have to communicate what he has said in a way that is consistent with what he has provided to us through his previous witness. And everything you say has to be not only consistent with what he has previously said, but also consistent with the historic events being described. And anything that you say has to include prophecy. And that prophecy has to come to fruition exactly as described. So unless you are able to correctly present history, both past and future, you cannot be considered a spokesperson for Yahweh. Now, this is a terrible problem for Paul, because his depictions of history are all inaccurate and conflicting, and his lone prophecy is false. So he starts off with a "do not trust me, I am the plague of death" sign hanging around his neck. Yahweh's prophetic trademarks, or prophecy, is his trademark, and it's required of anyone who claims to speak for him. By Yah's own definition, he says that those who speak for him accurately predict the future, and that if a prophet says something that does not come true as he predicted, once you get only, you don't get a single mistake, one mistake, one false prophecy, and you are to be condemned. This isn't the Notre Dame's means of evaluation, where Notre Dame's has to be looked at in hindsight, and then the facts need to be tailored to vague proposals, and where then you pick the one or two that are plausible reinterpretations of past events that can be considered accurate through the right lens, and disregard the 20 which did not materialize. In Yahweh's world, if you're going to claim to speak for him, all of your predictions have to be detailed and precise, and all have to occur exactly when, how, and where you said they would occur. And if you get a single prediction wrong, if you fail to make a single prediction, or if you get a single prediction wrong, no matter how many you may have gotten right, you are a false prophet. So we have a test. And once we have completed our review of Galatians, we'll deploy the same test again. But I want to provide you with the test so that you're thinking in advance, so that when we say things, you can say, yeah, I realize that's a violation of Yahweh's Torah test for who's speaking for him. We know that Moshe spoke for him in the Torah, because Yahweh was visible as Moshe spoke, as a giant flame ablaze the top of Mount Horeb. We know that the Torah reflects Yahweh's witness through Moshe, because Yahweh actually spoke his Torah to the children of Israel while Moshe was standing in their midst. So we have absolute proof that the Torah was inspired by Yahweh. It's the book where he was introduced, the book where he explained the process of creation. It's the book where he introduced the covenant. It's the book where he provided the invitations to meet with him. It's the book in which he rescued his children from the religious and political militaristic regime of Egypt. And everything that is said in that Torah has proven to be accurate historically and prophetically. Proving, as well as scientifically proving, that it was inspired by Yahweh. So, now here is the test and the text of that test as it emerges from the Torah. Surely, indeed, emphasizing the point, a person who proclaims a message on behalf of a deity, a Nabi, a prophet, who, relationally, oversteps their bounds and speaks presumptuously and contemptuously. In this case, to speak presumptuously is to make a claim that overstates your position. To claim, for example, to be an apostle when you're not appointed as an apostle. To claim to be inspired by God when you're inspired by the adversary. To have any ego at all. And if you're speaking for Yahweh, you got to check your ego at the curb. And Yahweh loves passion. He loves enthusiasm. He loves people who enjoy the pursuit of knowledge and understanding. He loves those who are willing to engage, who have a backbone, who exercise good judgment, who are observant, who come to know him and love him. But God has no interest in those with ego. In fact, it is by recognizing that we are nothing compared to God, that our testimony is worthless compared to his, that we become useful to God. So someone who would say, "Listen to me," or "But I say," has already disqualified themselves attitudinally for speaking to God, which is why this begins as it does. So the first thing that Yahweh says is that if a person is presumptuous, if they're making claims for themselves, if they have an inflated sense of self-worth, if they demonstrate self-reliance while taking liberties to defy him, if they show any arrogance and pretend to know something that isn't disclosed to all of us, if they're insulting to others, if they display pride in the pursuit of personal recognition and acclaim while despising rivals, then they are not working for him. Now, this is the literal definition of Paul's attitude as it plays out in his letter to the Galatians regarding the disciples, regarding Yahweh's Torah. And it's important for everyone listening to recognize that when someone takes liberties, when they demonstrate self-reliance, when they say, "But I say," when they arrogantly pretend to know, when they insult others that are, particularly those that are sharing Yahweh's testimony, when they're overbearing, when they act in a furious manner, when they're prone to rage, all of which is associated with Paul, all of which Paul himself has admitted to, then they can't be speaking for Yahweh. Yahweh loves passionate people, not enraged people. Yahweh loves people who are aggressive, who engage, but not presumptuous people. Yahweh likes those who enjoy participating, who aren't afraid to share what they have learned. But he doesn't ever engage with the arrogant. they're disqualified, because if you're going to convey Yahweh's message, the first thing you recognize is you're conveying his message, not yours. The second thing you recognize is that his message is infinitely superior to your own. You never say, but God says this, but I say. Because what we say is irrelevant compared to what God says. And so we learn that we are dependent upon him for knowledge and understanding, and we should share what we've come to know and understand from his testimony. Period. It's more than enough. And anyone who goes beyond that, as Paul did, particularly someone who contradicts what God had said, then they're not speaking for God. The inclusion of Paul's letters, which represent half of the Christian New Testament, is a great sin. It's a crime. It's an abomination. Based on this statement alone. And it's the first one that God begins with. He doesn't tolerate presumptuousness. He doesn't tolerate self-reliance. He does not tolerate arrogance. Those who speak for him respect him. Those who speak for him always limit what they have to say to that which can be learned and understood from his word and his perspective. So, surely, the person who proclaims a message on behalf of a deity who oversteps their bound and speaks presumptuously has an inflated sense of self-worth and demonstrates self-reliance while taking liberties, who arrogantly pretends to know and who insults others and disrespectful for the purpose of conveying a statement in my name, which accordingly I have not expressly appointed, taught, guided, or entirely directed him to speak in the name, who speaks in the name of other gods, indeed, then that prophet, he is deadly. So let's go to number two here. He's saying that the arrogant, which would be Paul, presumptuous, claiming to be an apostle when he was never appointed one, one who is prone to rage, as Paul has pointed out that he is routinely, and who is self-reliant and says, but I say, he says that person is deadly. Now, that's consistent with what he will say in Habakkuk 666 years before Paul would pen his first letter. But then he says that if that person makes a statement in my name, renown or reputation, and everything Paul said, he says, I am inspired by, I am authorized by, I am appointed by God. He said God chose him in his mother's womb, that he was taught only by God and not by men, that his words come from God himself. Well, Paul makes that claim. And yet, he does not say what Yahweh appointed, taught, and guided. And in fact, demeans everything that God had to say. That's why he's so deadly. Now, Paul also violated the second aspect of this, and actually it's the third. So he was presumptuous and arrogant, number one. Number two, what he had to say was in opposition to, rather than in compliance with, that which had been taught, guided, and directed by Yahweh. Lo sawa. Sawa is a word that very often is indicative of Yahweh's teaching and guidance in his Torah. And so if you do not convey that, then you're not speaking for Yahweh. And that's the point of all this. So if you're not conveying what's in the Torah, then you're not speaking for Yahweh, period. And not only didn't Paul convey what's in the Torah, he condemned the Torah. So that goes from not speaking for Yahweh and therefore lying when he said that God appointed him and God inspired him and that God taught him. That was an absolute lie. But it means that you've gone beyond that and that you're representing the adversary. And if you claim to speak for God and your message is just different than the Torah, it goes beyond, say, the Torah, then while you wouldn't qualify as a divine spokesperson, that doesn't mean you would necessarily be speaking for the adversary. But if your testimony is in opposition to God's testimony, if your belief system is wholly opposed to his teaching, then you're advocating on behalf of the adversary. Then you have to consider Paul's admission that he was demon-possessed to be accurate. Now, at the end of this, it says that a prophet who speaks in the name of other gods, in addition to these other caveats, is that he is deadly. Well, muth is the devoid of life and destructive, muth, here in Hebrew. The fact is that Paul's entire premise is based upon grace. Gratia in Latin, after the gratia or the Roman variations of the charities in Greece. They are always depicted as a threesome of goddesses, always naked, always engaged in merriment, parties, almost always depicted aiding and abetting illicit sexual encounters. They are the goddesses of licentiousness. And Paul chose them to be the basis of his message. It was the gospel of grace, of the gratia, cherish in Greek for the charities. So God is saying, if you speak, claiming to speak for him presumptuously, and the names of, using the names of other gods, that you're deadly. That's, he's saying this of Paul. Paul violated every aspect of this. Now, Muth makes this, the statements of a false prophet, deadly and destructive, revealing that those who believe him or her will die. And because this is nothing to trifle with, we should do everything we can to destroy their message before it infects and kills more unwitting souls. So what we're doing by exposing and condemning Paul's message is life-saving. It's compassionate. It's merciful. And if you actually say in your heart, how shall we actually and consistently know accordingly if the statement which he speaks or writes is not Yahweh's? So God is saying, I've given you an introduction as to what messages are deadly. Now, as it so happens, Paul's message is the poster child. If you were to take everyone who has ever written in all of time, Paul would be the most deadly. Now, there's some other folks that have written claiming to speak for God that are deadly. You know, the founder of Scientology. The founder of Mormonism, the founder of Islam, Muhammad, Joseph Smith, and I've forgotten the name of the Scientology science fiction author, but Hubbard, L. Ron Hubbard. All of them fit this. They were all egotistical. They were all presumptuous. They all spoke in the names of other gods. They're all deadly. They're all destructive. But no one has been as deadly and destructive. No one has ever taken this claim to speak on behalf of God so far and has influenced as many people as Paul. So while he is not the only one guilty of this, his letters are the most egregious violation of this, by far. Far worse than Maimonides and Akiba, rabbinical Jews, which God despises both. As a matter of fact, I would be willing to wager that the Torahless one, known to Christians as the Antichrist, will be far less effective, will be far less deadly than Paul. That's a sobering thought. So God now is saying that if you want to know in your heart, and the heart in Hebrew is more than from a feeling point of view. That's one's core. It's one's perspective on everything comes out of the heart. When in the Hebrew mindset, when you were observant and took things, information in, and then you processed it in your brain, and you came to a point where you wanted to incorporate what you now understood through contemplation, so that it became part of the fabric of your life, so it formed your perspective on the world, and you were taking that information to heart. So from that perspective, if you want to know, how can we actually and consistently know, this is yada, shall we continually possess the information required to genuinely distinguish, to discriminate, to understand, and to acknowledge? This was written in the call stem, which is to convey actually, genuinely, and literally, and in the imperfect conjugation, which reveals the ability to know over time, and to know in a manner that is consistent and continual, irrespective of time. Accordingly, if the statement which he speaks or writes, this is debar, so the statement that can be spoken or written, preaching or letters, is not Yahweh's. So in this particular case, he could say we could know if something is Yahweh's, or to know if it is not Yahweh's. And in this particular case, he is telling us what is not Yahweh's, which is not conveyed by him, which is not inspired by him, which is not consistent with what he has said. And he goes on. Now, this is God speaking directly to us in first person. If that which is deliberately spoken over time by the one who proclaims the message in Yahweh's name is not literally and consistently present and established, or it does not actually come to be, the message which he himself has deliberately spoken to influence is not Yahweh's. Okay, you have two verbs here. So if this person speaking over the course of time proclaims a message in Yahweh's name, claims that, you know, he's speaking for the God of the Old Testament, that would be Yahweh. But what he says is not Haya, is Lo Haya, which means it's not literally and consistently present and established. Haya means to establish, to exist. So if he's saying, what he's saying does not currently exist among Yahweh's words. Now, this is debar. If it is not consistent in Yahweh's debar, which is Yahweh's testimony, if it does not currently exist in Yahweh's testimony, the person is not speaking for Yahweh. That's what the high is meaning here. And what Paul said cannot be found in Yahweh's testimony. The times that he quoted and tried to cite Yahweh, he misquoted him. Every time he makes a misstatement about Yahweh from his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, he truncates the statement, misquotes Yahweh, and puts it in a context whereby he draws the opposite from the intended remark. And so nothing Paul says exists in Yahweh's testimony. Nothing. And he says, if what the person says does not exist in Yahweh's testimony, don't trust him. He's not speaking for God. Well, Paul is the poster child for that. No, so is Muhammad. Muhammad claims that his Quran confirms the Torah when, in fact, it contradicts it. You know, Paul claims that his letters were inspired by the God whom he is contradicting in his letters. Now, the second verb is lobo. So it now is going and talking about that which does not come to be. So if he says something that doesn't currently exist, as in words that are not in the Torah, or he says something that doesn't come to exist, such as prophecy, then the message that he has deliberately spoken for the purpose of influencing his dabar, what he has communicated orally in writing, is not Yahweh's. Well, here we look at Paul. He did not cite the Torah. In fact, he spoke out against it. He did not correctly predict the future. His lone prophecy failed to materialize as he delineated it. He has failed both of these codicils. He cannot, therefore, be inspired by God. Scattering mist for today. God goes on to tell us about the false prophets. And he says, in arrogance and presumptuousness and zedon, with an inflated view of oneself, being self-willed and self-motivated, this morally flawed, disrespectful, insulting, and shameless individual has taken great liberty while all overstepping all due bounds in contempt of the established authority. This prophet has spoken and written. So God is saying that if you speak in the names of other gods, which Paul did with the gospel of grace, never once explained the meaning of Yahusha's name, never once said or wrote Yahweh's name, but wrote often of the charis, of the charities, of the Greek gods of sexual perversity. Never once accurately cited or affirmed Yahweh's Torah teaching, and yet demeaned it. Never once issued an accurate prophecy. So therefore, Yahweh is going back to his first point, saying, this is the very definition of arrogance and presumptuousness. This is a person who is speaking with an inflated view of themselves. So he's telling me that as a result, the prophet's writings, their spoken words, are arrogant and presumptuous. They're insulting. They're shameless. That would define all of Paul's letters by any rational evaluation. If you compare what Paul said to this test, all of Paul's letters are written arrogantly and presumptuously. All of it. And God says, you should not respect or revere him, nor conspire to rebel with him. Lo gur min. You should not fear him, join him, congregate, or live with him either. From Dabarim, words, Deuteronomy 18, 21 and 22. It should be noted here that while Haya exists, is instituted and is established, and Bo comes to be, conveys somewhat similar thoughts in English. They don't in Hebrew. By using them in conjunction with each other, Yahweh is telling us that if anything a prophet says is divergent from what he has already instituted and established in his word, if it isn't found in his word or is inconsistent with history, both past or present, then this prophet is not inspired by God. And then if you add the concept of Bo, it's if he says things that don't come true, that he's a false prophet. Those who speak for Yahweh must therefore accurately depict what has occurred, in addition to accurately predicting what will occur, while always and consistently conveying Yahweh's testimony as it is found in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. If they do that, then they're speaking for Yahweh. But if they're doing that, the fact of the matter is, beyond the idea of an additional prophecy or an additional statement for God, which is consistent with everything he has said and is comes true, the fact of the matter is that a person who speaks for God is someone who reads and recites his existing testimony. Their prophecies come true because they're citing Yahweh's prophecies through his spokespeople. Their words are accurate because they're his words. So the bottom line here is, if you want to speak for God, if you want to claim to speak for God, speak his words. Share what he shared with us in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. You can expound on what he had to tell us. You can help people understand what he had to tell us. You can encourage people to think about what he had to tell us. You can advocate the idea of responding to what he had to tell us. But if you want to speak for God, you need to share what he had to share with us. And you'll find those words in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. You will not find those words in Paul's letters. They're in violation of this test. They ought to be wholly and completely disregarded, and yet they're used as the basis of a new religion.